picture perfect first deer hunt experience. If I could have written it out and said, this is how I want it to go with my daughter on her first trip, couldn't have been better. I hear something and I look over and that bear is already at like 35 yards and he is racing into us. Any part of the bear that you can is going to be super tender. It's just got that fat already there and it doesn't turn on you like it does in just a freezer. There's going to be a time for people to really get to know each other and have those little one-on-ones with the presenters. You know, when we cut out and Birch Barrel is there making our dinners and cooking over the barrels. This is Ryan Lampers, and you're listening to the Wild Initiative Podcast.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
I would rest at peace for eternity if my legacy was that I made a positive influence on the non-hunting public about what hunters are and what hunting is.
I finally got my buck on our last real day of hunting.
So a pro-hunting organization is voting against hunting. And that says anti-hunting to me.
There was a year straight where I was averaging up to 200 death threats a day.
And I hugged it. Like, I just wanted to hug a bear.
It's proven that the average steak in a grocery store touches 50 to 100 hands and machines. And we're putting that into our body.
Hey, y'all. Cable Smith, host of the Lone Star Outdoors Show here.
This is Adam Weatherby.
I'm Corey Jacobson with Elk 101.
This is Christy Titus.
Hey, folks. This is John Bear.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Outdoor Collective.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
All right, y'all. So getting into today's episode, I'm hanging out up here in a very familiar spot. Not that any of y'all can see it, but I am up here in Three Forks, Montana, hanging out with the one and only Ryan Lampers. Ryan, thanks for sitting down, having me up again.
I didn't even have to travel. You came to the house today. Yeah, this is too easy.
Kind of nice. Yeah. You were joking earlier that the girls are going to come home and they're going to be like, oh my gosh, he's here again?
He's back. Uncle Sam, he's probably going to be here for a month.
How long is he staying this time?
All right. Yeah. No.
Like, I was saying I need to show him my Montana driver's license and be like, I'm moving in, guys.
Yeah, I think Paley, we were talking, she's 12 now, and she's getting older, and she's got that eye roll down incredibly well. She's become very good at, like, picking out all your little flaws, and if you say something a little bit wrong, she's at that age where she catches you. You got to be on your toes with Paley right now.
Man. You've got a teenager coming up pretty quick.
We're close. I feel like we're already there. Oh, and God. It's come so fast. All of a sudden, like, hair matters and the jeans you wear matter. And that wasn't the case a year ago. None of that mattered.
Just wait till she's really embarrassed of you when you're doing stuff out in public.
Yeah, you know, and honestly, Sam, I'm already seeing it. And it's a little heartbreaking because, you know, I still think of her as my little girl. And, you know, I've got my little 5-year-old Tana, and she'll still let me hold her and hold her hand, all that kind of stuff. But, boy, I just even throw my arm around Paley these days, and you just feel the, like, cringe, and she just wants to wiggle her way out of you.
Oh, Dad.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad. Thankfully, I have a little that still allows me to do that.
Well, I remember, and I can't remember if we even we must have talked about this on the last podcast, but I remember it's just so funny when I was here the first time, and you know, I was kind of helping, like, you guys would be out, and yep. You know, I know you know, the girls would be coming home early and like, oh, hey, just make sure the girls are alive when you get home. And I remember coming in, they're like, Sam, there's like a mouse or a bird or something, you know, in the garage. And I just remember the whole adventure of trying to locate this mouse or bird or whatever it was squeaking away in the garage.
Oh, man.
And then I just remember, you should shoot it.
You should shoot it. That's and classic, like, Tanner, right there.
I'm like, yeah, whose daughter is that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is definitely it. A young Lampers right there.
Mm-hmm. I think she's going to be quite the hunter. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure at this point. You just let them make that decision themselves. But
yeah.
I've got an inkling that she's going to be like pretty hardcore when she gets of age.
Well, it's just, I love those pictures because it's like, you see it in her face. Like, she has that face that, like, she gets intense and invested. Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you see the little videos and pictures you share where, like, you're cooking a steak or you're processing something or, you know, you're bringing out a skull and she is all about it in her pink tutu or whatever mm-hmm. it happens to be, like.
Yeah, absolutely. It's usually some type of princess dress. I mean, usually we're on a hike, she's in a princess dress. If we're shooting porcupines, she's in, like, a princess sweatshirt or princess dress, something. But, no, she's a ton of fun, and she's very perceptive. Like, she notices everything, picks it up. Most kids do. But the one thing that will be interesting with her, like, she hates blood. Like,
really?
She's always had this thing for blood. Like, she just, it's like, oh, blood, Dad, you know, and it grosses her out. So that'll be interesting if she kind of outgrows that. But she's fascinated with blood, like, coming out of a cut of hers, even if it's just a little paper cut.
Huh.
It's like the end of the world because there's actually blood there, visual. And so, I don't know. We'll see. How it all pans out in the end, but she's 5 now. And, you know, Paley, we got her out on hers, our first hunt. She was 11 and she's 12 now. So we got a lot of years left.
Well, and she just took her first deer.
So, yep. Paley took hers this last season. And it's interesting, like Montana, you know, she was able to hunt here prior to having her hunter's ed card, because they have that mentorship program here. So I went in and got the papers down mm-hmm. at Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and signed them up. And they can hunt with you between 10 and 12. And then after that, you can take your – at 12, she took that hunter safety card right when she turned 12, basically. So now she'll be, you know, buying the regular deer tag, and now she can get an elk tag and a bear tag and whatever she wants to get. But, yeah, we got her out last year on her first, and now she's all carded up with her hunter safety, and we just went through that a couple months ago, and it's actually pretty interesting now with that. They don't have in-person field days mm-hmm. with COVID, so I feel like we got gypped a little bit. Like, we just did all of it on the computer. We didn't do anything in you know, in person, but yeah, we just did it from our house here, so different. Well,
that's one thing I was talking about with my neighbor is, you know, we were talking earlier, you know, he picked up his first bow recently, but he went and got his hunter safety as well. And because he's done it before in I can't remember where he said, like Colorado or something. He's originally from Colorado, and he went and got it there, but he couldn't find his card and he couldn't find the record of it, all blah, blah, blah. So he's just like, I'm just going to take it again. And yeah, Montana's doing everything online right now,
mm-hmm.
which, to be honest, if somebody new is trying to get into hunting and they want to do it the least impact, like the way that requires the least impact,
right?
Hunter safety has 100% reciprocity across all states, from California to New York to Florida to Washington. It does not matter where you get your hunter safety
mm-hmm.
or your bow hunter safety if you have to take a bow hunter course.
Yep.
It applies anywhere. So you technically, you know, don't have to get it in the state that you're a resident in.
No.
So say somebody does, you know, if some of these states that do have in-person courses, they could take their hunter safety online in Montana.
Yeah, or knock it out in a weekend here.
A ton of these other states that allow you to do them online.
Yep.
And bada bing, bada boom, you use that and, mm-hmm. and you're good to go.
It's interesting. It's been, 37 years since I went through my hunter safety course. It's kind of interesting to re-up on some of the things that were in there. Definitely just changed. But Yeah, we kind of went through it together. And yeah, we spent a lot of time. It was a long weekend that we did it. And she did take a little break from it before she had the final kind of walk through. It was like a, not an in-person test, but it was kind of like a, I think it was like, I don't know, 90 questions or something at the end there that she went through. It kind of reaffirms all the things she learned. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. Definitely, I went through it with her and realized I probably would not ace this test. I've hunted a lot of years. There's some things here. Well, there's a few things that I questioned the answers to, and there's a lot of things I guess I forgot.
I remember, and there's a few things, you know, if it was anything like the one I took, and I assume they're fairly cohesive, imagine, across the board. Like they're, yeah, you know, it's generally the same stuff, but I do remember there's some that I'm like, really? When they asked the question, there was a few that were kind of a little bit up to interpretation.
Could have been answers that were correct, I think.
Either, you know, one was maybe more correct than the other, but...
Well, here's two questions, for example, that stuck out for me. One of the questions on the final was, what is a dilemma? And I'm like, it's a vocabulary lesson? Like, has this got to do with... What is a dilemma? And so she had to, you know, have the... A, B, C, or D, the definition of the term dilemma. And then the other one that I still kind of blows me away a little bit was basically, you know, what's true with steel shot over lead shot? And one, I think answer A was like, you know, steel weighs 2/3 the weight of lead. Okay, true. And then B was some crazy answer, you know?
Yeah.
And then D was some crazy. But C was steel is like something like less heavy, so it's more unstable. Like steel is less stable in the air as lead. And I thought, that's true as well. Like I would have picked A or C.
Yeah.
But you can only pick one. So that, well, both answers are true. And fortunately, picked the first one and got it right. But could have went either way.
Yeah, that's one of those things when it's like, okay, you have to pick the more true answer.
The more true answer.
I'm like, that's ridiculous. Just give me a...
Yeah, I want absolute, like, no question. This is the answer.
But. Just give me the ridiculous answers and then the one that's right.
Yeah. But it was fun. We went through it, and she's now got her card, and now we got a lot of fun ahead of us.
So I know, you know, for a lot of guys, you know, especially, you know, it's kind of almost a foregone conclusion. You know, guys have some son, you have a son, you know, you want to get them into hunting. A lot of guys, you know, you've got two daughters and you're an avid hunter, and I'm sure you'd like to see them follow along in your footsteps. So what's some stuff that you would share with other guys, mm-hmm, as far as like introducing kids into hunting?
Yeah, that's always been like a kind of a big question, right? Is to, How do I do this right so that they want to do it, or that they have maybe a little interest in it? Because the big fear is they're just going to absolutely despise it and hate it. And so, yeah, I've talked about this before. I remember thinking back, like, what got me so into it? What got me 100% bought in? Like, I want to do this thing. I want to go with my dad on every trip he goes on from 10 years old. And what my dad did with me, Sam, was he went on all these trips before I was legally allowed to go hunt myself. And he'd come back with stories and, you know, pheasant, quail, and birds, and the black-tailed deer. And he's, you know, he just laid these out, and then I get to hear about them. I was like, man, you know, this is the coolest thing ever. So he didn't really take me a whole lot when I was little, even on the bird trips. He could have, but... maybe he was being selfish and he just wanted to get those last few years in on his own. But I think for me, with my personality, I guess it tripped something to where he kind of held it away from me at a distance. And then when it was finally 10, it's like, all right, now you can go. And so I was all in, like, it didn't matter what it was. Even if it wasn't a, you know, an action packed trip, I was a hook, line, and sinker. And I think that's the question. Like, is there a downfall to maybe bringing them too early? Or is that what's going to get certain personalities to really fall in love with it? You know, I've taken my girls, you know, at their ages on quite a few little like day trips, you know, nothing crazy, definitely very aware of not getting them out into harsh conditions. That's a major, like, let's just not do this. This is just
you're not taking
back.
Them up on the ridge during the lightning storm.
No lightning storms, no massive, like minus 20 degree systems that roll through Montana. None of those.
Come on, just girls. Let's go to Grizzly
to be
country.
Comfortable. You want them to be comfortable, warm, and you always want snacks. You have that covered, and you also want it to be entertaining. So even if you're not seeing game, pointing out all the things that they don't see on a daily basis, like tracks, sign, you know, mm-hmm. scat, stuff like that, deer rubs, elk rubs, looking for things or building, you know, a checklist or a treasure hunt type thing. Just keeps them not getting bored. I think getting boredom is, especially with today's age, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like go from one thing to the next. So back in my era, it was just par for the course.
Yeah.
There's just not so many things going. We weren't tuned in. We didn't have these phones and always on the computer, always on to the next thing. But nowadays, I think that's definitely changed. So keeping them entertained is a big part of it. But, you know, what I've seen is, and I've said this, and Hill and I have had these conversations, like, what if they don't like it? And I couldn't care less if they don't. Like, if they didn't want to go, Paley didn't want to go on her first deer trip, fine with me. You know, love her still. It's just not in the cards for her. But I was very fortunate that she did. Now, obviously, you want them to. You hope they can because selfishly, you're gonna be able to teach them a lot of things. You're going to be able to share in these, you know, events. And, you know, you're going to be able to teach them a lot, not just about hunting, but life lessons and working hard and endurance. And, you know, there's this goal and prize at the end if you work hard. There's a lot of value in it, I think. And so I'm very fortunate that my first, who came of age, decided she wanted to try it. And then, you know, as we went into last year's hunt, it could not have gone any better.
Yeah.
Like, I made sure of those things. I was worried about the weather. Made sure, you know, I run like a 7,900 cubic pack so I can get extra stuff in there. And, you know, my wife Hill came with me on that one and it was great. But we, you know, we had all the snacks there and things that would make her comfortable. And then where we probably screwed up a little bit is at the shot because we literally had to wait for this buck to stand up. You know, this buck was an hour and a half of us sitting there waiting with cold wind in our face
mm-hmm.
before the buck stood up, and she just made a perfect shot. And we're like piling clothes on after the fact. You know, she's already shaking. We're all shaking. It was cold. And there's a video of that, and some folks have seen it, but it was kind of cool and how it went out or worked out. She got a pack, the Oregon meat out. We kind of all shared and packing that out of there. And got a good fire at the end of it. Got a good night hike out of it.
Nice.
It's kind of like you just picture perfect first deer hunt experience.
It's like the textbook. This is how it's written in the manual.
I could have written it out and said, this is how I want it to go with my daughter on her first trip. Couldn't have been better. And my wife got to enjoy it as well.
Yeah.
And she hadn't really experienced any of that either. So she got to be there with Paley when she, you know, got to walk up on that deer and but you got to shoot the deer. In fact, my wife was kind of holding the camera on Paley when she did shoot the deer, and it was really cool. But I think everybody got a lot out of that trip, seeing how it all went. But and the other thing was we took her to a game-rich environment. So there weren't these, like, big delays in seeing animals.
You're not going after that one specific deer.
Right.
As long as we get to a spot where we can see some bucks,
mm-hmm.
a good amount of bucks, that's what we want.
Numbers of deer, numbers of animals, even if it wouldn't have been deer, like maybe we're out in speed goat country, we're seeing a lot of antelope or elk or whatever, but I wasn't going to take her up to like northwest Montana where you're fighting to see a buck in 3 days, 4 days. It's thick and not much glassing, and you know, it just doesn't seem like fitting for how I wanted this to go. And, So worked out great, but that's my only advice, is figure out who they are and what's going to work best for them. Because I was hoping doing it the right way, but apparently it worked. But they, you know, they've been on a lot of trips with me, younger, not actually hunting, but, you know, Tana, she's, we go out and just do these little day trips around the valley here for mostly porcupines and things like that.
Yeah.
Non-game animals.
Actually, I talk about you guys a lot because my porcupine story from hunting in Montana comes up often. And, you know, I think a lot of people are like, porcupine? Like, really? And I'm like, well, you know, I got a buddy. He, like, you know, he and his daughter, that's like their favorite thing to go out and do. And they, it makes a damn good stew for sure.
It is a great little fun animal to go for if you have kids.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about the wind. You don't have to worry about, you just got to find them, right? And then, you know, they're pretty easy to take down.
Don't require much of a pack out.
No. And
it's nice having a thick pack
really
when you
tasty.
Do. But
yeah, and that's the thing. Like, definitely some things learned with the little porcupine hunts. What I have my daughter do, and Paley's a master at getting them out of the woods. We just put the dog leash on the, wrap it around one of the front legs, front feet, and carry it out, drag it out. But they're not that scary once you've, a lot of people are like, well, how do you deal with
it? Is it going to shoot its spines at
me? Yeah, no, really.
No, you're fine.
They haven't been poked. Yeah, you flip them on their backside, and they skin out like anything else. And
yeah,
it's surprising. You get a medium to large porky, and you get a lot of meat out of it.
It's, like, you do. They're a lot bigger than I think people realize. Like, we're used
they're
to
heavy.
I'd never seen one until a few years ago when I was here hunting, and all of a sudden, like this thing's way bad. I mean, he was a hefty porcupine. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a fat guy. But they're way bigger than you expect, I think, initially, from watching cartoons as a kid or something like that.
Oh, yeah. No, they got some weight to them for sure. And you'll find every once in a while you come across just a giant. But it's fun. You know, when the kids are just have a day to go out and do something like that, just looking up in the trees and, you know, usually we're probably not the smartest to take the dogs because, you know, you hope the dogs don't get poked.
Yeah.
We've definitely had that several times, and some dogs learn, some dogs don't. But I've got one older gal, and she'll bark when we come across the porky. She kind of knows the game.
Nice.
So, but you hope to see them up in the trees where they're easy to find.
Yeah.
But tons of fun over the winter months because the other thing about porkies, like, in the winter months, it's cold all night. They'll run up the tops of those whatever cottonwood scrub, buck brush, Russian olives are notorious for having them, and they'll sun themselves and they'll get a little heat up on the tops, grab some sun, and that's why we see them up on the tops there.
Okay.
Yep, in the winter.
But you know what? I like just how you kind of introduce them to the fun, the exciting stuff that, you know, you present all of that, the things we really enjoy about hunting in an accessible way, and effectively let them make their own decisions. You know, it's because I think forcing someone to hunt is probably the quickest way to turn them off to it. I have a good friend, and her son, you know, she hunts, and, you know, she wants her son to hunt, and her ex, the boy's father, is big hunter. He's got a YouTube channel, you know, it's all about it. Like, that's his life. And right. He's like, my son's going to hunt. Her son's kind of a sensitive kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's doesn't really like the idea of killing animals.
Right.
And so she had gotten him into archery. Just, hey, you can go out and you can have fun and shoot. But the second he got his bow, his dad was like, you're going to go kill this animal. And like, stuck him in front of him and was like, shoot, shoot, shoot. Kid never wants to go hunting again. And I mean,
deal.
It's like, it's
too bad.
So the opposite of how it should be, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's too bad. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of that out there for sure. You know, guys, we can be guys.
Yeah.
But I think if you step back and think about it, it's like, hey, some are just, this is not going to sit well with them. Don't push it. Just let it happen. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be, and they'll come to you. But And then in saying that, though, maybe there's some kids that need a little push into it, but I don't know. I'm kind of on the mindset that if it's something they want to do, it's they'll tell you about it.
Yeah.
And they'll have something that wants them to get into it versus I would never just be like, you're going. You're going, and you're going to shoot a giant.
Just sit him down and be like, pull the trigger now.
Nope. Yeesh. Nope. No, it was cool with Paley on hers, too. I think her first, it wasn't a requirement. Her first ask was she wanted to get something with big ears. And so that was the only like thing that she wanted out of it. Like something she wanted to get one with, which all that means is Sam has had to be a mule deer.
I was going to say, right? So you're hunting mule deer.
Yeah. This is a very anti-whitetail hunt. She had stipulations that had to be a mule deer, big ears. And, of course we get out on that hunt and there's only mule deer around. They all got big ears. And then the first buck that came in, we had a great opportunity. It had seen movement, tops of our heads, working through some sage. And, it's middle of November, whatever it was, rut, young buck, 2.5-year-old buck, sees movement. They're looking for does. He stomps on in real easy, gives us a nice broadside, Paley set up. And we were kind of like, is she going to take it or is she not going to take it? And at one point, she decided she was going to take it. And we're like, all right. And then she decided it's not the one. And prior to that happening, we were actually on our way to get this other buck that we had seen. And he was a little bit older of a buck, a little bigger frame on him, bigger rack. And maybe that had something to do with it. But it was also the first night in that we were going. We had some days to work this. And I that was like the best choice she could have made, because now we got this whole other day to go out and really spend more time glassing, learn the layout of this, kind of see how we see a buck from a distance, how we negotiate getting there, the stock, how we get set up. There's just a lot more to it when we had more days to have her out there. And then Hill got to see that as well. So it worked out really good that she got a little snobby on us and got a little picky and wanted to take one that was much older. And right behind us here is the buck that she took right there. It's an old buck. He's an old regress. And he's probably 2 years past his prime. And, just he had the biggest body and kind of it was funny watching him, because I had seen this buck before, is he would just like bristle up and just walk other bucks out of the territory. He'd just see a buck, and he'd just stiff-legged and bristle and puff up, and he just looked like a linebacker out there, walking these other younger bucks or even bucks that have larger racks, but he was just crusty and old and crotchety. And so it was really the perfect buck to take out of there.
Yeah.
So we got a nice, old, mature, had the big ears, had all the things.
Yeah, he's got the big ears.
So it's cool.
Checked the box.
It checked all the boxes. Made me happy, made her happy.
There you go. Well, man, but so we're coming up. It's, end of March right now. We got black bear season coming up. We were just talking about that a bit ago. When does the season officially start here in Montana?
15th.
15th.
Yeah, weeks away. Literally weeks away.
That's right, because I think I've got like a week and a half. My residency officially kicks in like a week and a half before the season starts or something like that.
Yeah. That's close. But the nice thing is a lot of these places or a lot of the best areas that we found here really don't really pop till May.
Yeah.
Just the elevation we have here, it's almost better to – I mean, there will be bear seen right out of the gates in certain places, but definitely treat Montana a little bit later than a lot of other states. Mid to late May is when seems to like a lot of those passes where some of the older, more mature boars are that you need to get into. They tend to open up a little better at that point.
I mean beyond I guess the just the snow melt and the passes opening up, when it stays cold, and I guess we'll see what kind of happens over the next couple of weeks.
Right.
It's like it'll be snowing in the morning, and then it's like sunny and 50 in the afternoon.
It's been unreal.
Like today even. It was snowing.
Yeah, it was snowing a little bit. But you look outside, it looks like summer.
Yeah.
No snow, like on the ground. It feels like gardening season, Sam.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, you go stick a shovel into it, and it's frozen ground. But it, I think we're going to have like 63 degrees some point this week. Jeez. It's crazy warm. So
it's like, how does that affect, beyond again the passes opening being open or closed, and for travel corridors and whatnot? But like, how does that affect?
Yeah.
What they're doing coming out of.
I think this year will be interesting because the mountains are loaded with snow. Like, we have a crud ton. We're maxed out with snow up there, right? We just didn't get much down here.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be probably in line with most years, I think. It's all about that elevation. It's all about the green grass. And, you know, I hike every day up on the mountain. You can almost see it from here out the window. And I just put like 3, 4, 5 miles on every day. And I'm up there at 5,300 feet, and I'm already seeing green popping. You know, there's green grasses starting to show. Now, of course, you know, this time of year, you never know what's going to happen in Montana. We could have insane cold here all next week. But it just feels like it's a little bit earlier than most years. So maybe we'll have a little bit better bear hunt. Maybe those bears will come out of the den a little bit early this year. But, those upper elevations, it's just going to be where that green, you've heard people call it the green wave, or, you know, it's wherever that salad is, that's where you're going to find the bears. And it's so different. Each topography, you look at some of the better time frames to hunt, say the north panhandle of Idaho or whatever. You don't even think about hunting those areas until really like June, well into June. You know, that's when a lot of those upper elevations have cleared off, and those little pocket meadows up in those deep, dark timber areas. Each pocket meadow seems to have a bear at that time of year, you know. And in the lower elevations, it's way different. You can get really good hunting in mid-April to late April. I know back in Washington State, sometimes the first part of middle of April there was the best times, and we'd find some really good bears in that time frame. But you could get down into those lower elevations, you know, 3,000, 3,500 feet, and that's where the bears would be. So every place is just so different.
Yeah.
But
well, those pocket meadows have to be nice because those are real easy to glass. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just sitting locked on those for a while until you see that black speck come popping out.
No, they pop. Yeah, when you get like the mountain just starts to turn green sometime in May typically. And then, you know, eventually the whole dang mountain will be green. South slopes will start burning off, and you'll, one of the questions that inevitably seems to come up, Sam, is like, where do you find the bears?
Yeah.
Like, what are you looking for on the maps? What are you looking for in your e-scouting? It's just so different. It's just not an answer that you can like blanket statement. Yeah. Every place is so different. There's places that I hunt where I'm looking for nasty, craggy, rocky north slopes. The south slopes burn off quick, and those bears tend to move quickly away from that and roll right back over into the slope that they were probably denned up on. And they'll just be in beetle kill areas. It's a great place to find bears because not quite enough light is getting in to burn it off, but enough light to grow a lot of green grass.
Mm-hmm.
And so every area is just so unique and different. And they each have their best times to be hunting it. And the elevations are different. So like I said, Montana, I kind of treat Montana as mid to late May. I don't even think about it early when it first starts off.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, like I said, there'll be places where guys go in and probably kill bears right out of the gates.
it feels like, and I mean, you know, like you said, it's always the questions like, okay, where do I find them? What are, yeah, you know, it's because with like elk, it's like, okay, you need the water, food, this, you know, and with anything, yeah, you need bedding, food, right. and water.
Yep.
Any animal is going to be like that. But I feel like with bears, it's not as defined of a thing. It's, it almost feels like you got to put on miles and look for something that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can do a lot with your e-scouting. You can find those little pocket meadows that are completely surrounded in dark timber. And, you know, if you know the snow line, you're going to know that that's probably going to be an area that greens up. And it's just going to be a salad bowl. You know, there's going to be balsam roots and everything else popping. And bears just love those things. But each place is so different. Like, we used to focus in on wild onion areas back in Washington State. It's not even something I think about over here. I just don't find those areas. But, just every state, every range has got its own unique little tricks and things that you dial in over time, for sure. It's just hard to speak broadly. Like, this is where you're always going to find bears. I could say that to a guy hunting Northwest Montana, he'd say you're crazy. Where I could say that to a guy hunting Central Montana, and it would work great for him. But it's just hard to really speak to all things the same.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Do you really cue in on, I mean, obviously, yeah, if you're seeing scat, there's barren. Fresh scat, there's bear in the area. Are you really looking for those signs a lot, or are you just more out here, you know, way out here,
well,
trying to see them from a distance? Or
yeah, one of my favorite things to do is I really try to specifically go and hunt certain areas. And those areas that I find on Google Earth a lot, Google Earth really helps in, I think it helps in bear scouting more than almost other anything else. Finding those big vantages that overlook a crud ton of country, you know, and I love overlooking river drainages where there's a nasty north slope that's rocky. Maybe there's a ton of downfall. Maybe there's some burn to it. It's just ugly stuff. You wouldn't really want to spend much time on that north slope. That's going to be a great area for bears to den up, and they're going to be probably, you combo that with a little river drainage at the bottom and then maybe a, you know, more open south slope that's out of the gates, right out of their dens. They're going to be in there feeding on those grasses. They need the grasses. And then, and they'll start finding those like flowers and balsams and dandies and things like that. I love those type areas. I love where I can sit from a distance and just have a view of mass country like that. And sometimes with bears, you're literally seeing them and they're 3-4 miles away, and then you might spend the next day getting there, and then you have to sit at a little better, closer vantage where you actually can make a play or be within striking distance, and then again you're sitting there waiting for them to come out, you know. But getting those points that just cover a ton of country, I love that, and I'll sit there for days, and then eventually you'll get an idea. You know, of where there's a bear hanging out. And those first bears, when they first come out of the den, you know, they don't move too much. Sometimes they're just hanging that first week too, pretty dang close to that den. And they almost feels like they're scared of their shadow. They're just not willing to venture too far from it. And it's then like they,
when you
they
wake start. Up from a nap and you have no idea what year it is, what your name is,
where you
are.
Well, last year we watched a younger, beautiful red cinnamon. And this little thing, every time it was like a pine cone fell, he'd get about 100 yards from where he was denned up in these rocks. And like a pine cone fall or a breeze would come through, and he would just like sprint back right to those rocks and just bury himself, and we wouldn't see him for an hour. And then he'd come out again. It was pretty funny. But yeah, right at snow line, a real just gnarly, thick north slope covered in rocks and some patches of timber. That, you know, that bear just, they den in those type areas. But, it, you know, the goal is to try to find them in areas that, or in a time frame when you can actually go put a stock on them.
Yeah.
You know, times a year, you know, I like chasing them when they're just out of the den. They'll give you time to get there. They'll focus in on a nice little patch of grass sometimes, and they'll give you all day to get there, or at least they're going to be consistent coming back to that little salad bowl. As you get more towards June, and that rut starts to make them crazy and wander, and the whole game changes. Like, you may spot 10 bears, but maybe you couldn't even catch up to one of them because those boars are cruising ridges, and you just see them and watch them until they're gone. You just never can get ahead of them.
Well, sometimes, you know, you're lucky enough when you're focused on one, there's another one that you don't even see coming running into you, right?
That happens too. especially when you pull out the old game call there end of May. Yeah, that can happen. Is what we had happen last year.
Based on a true story.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Be very aware when you start ripping on game calls in bear country. Yeah. And
distress calls and calf calls.
Yeah, there's a time where they switch off the grass and they're willing to go for meat, and you know, it's usually when those calves start dropping or those, you know, fawns start dropping. And I tell you what, like, calling in bears is a ton of fun. But be on your toes.
I guess, man, yeah, calling in an elk's pretty intense. Calling in a bear.
Well, and they have soft pads, and they come in quiet, and you have to see them. It's not like you're hearing typically. Mm-hmm. An elk comes running in, or, you know, a moose, you hear that thing coming.
Yeah.
They're breaking down the forest to get to you, you know. It's unbelievable how those bears can just work through, and you don't know they're there until they're there. And like you said, like you were alluding to, sometimes even during the trip, you don't know they're there until you get home and realize that your camera picked them up and they were right next to you.
For everyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, talk a little bit about yours and Brian's film really quick, particular. And I can link to it on the show notes page for sure.
Yeah, well, one of our hunts last year, we had seen this bear from a distance, glassed him up, and it was like an all-day approach to get up to where this bear was. And he's just a beautiful red, bright red coat, real unique. Called him Red Lightning. He just stood out, you know, big old thing. And we had got a little video of him, and it took us a long time to get to the top of where this thing was feeding. And in the process of doing that, we got up there, and we came across another real nice chocolate up in the same drainage. And we were really considering taking that chocolate, but this red was just incredible. And we had a good idea of where it was, and it kind of slinked into some timber, and it disappeared on us. And we figured, you know, it was just bedded down for a little bit, and sometimes they'll bed down for a long time. So we got in a great vantage, and inevitably this bear ended up coming back out. And so we made a play, and we raced over there, and we got above right where we thought he would be, and we were like, we just couldn't figure out, like, where did he disappear to? It's like he just Houdini'd us. And it's starting to get late, and we start rolling across the top of that mountain, and roll down a ridge, trying to stay out of the basin, and we picked up that chocolate. And so we raced down, and Brian and I get set up, and, you know, we're trying to size him up again, just seeing if this is the same one that we videoed before. And he's a, you know, really nice bear. And, you know, this was a rifle hunt. This wasn't a bow hunt. So you put the ear protection on, and
yeah.
And this bear was kind of moving through some down timber. And, you know, I always carry a distress call around my neck to stop them. This happened to be a hunt, and Montana's loaded with grizzlies now. This was a hunt that I wasn't really planning on doing any bear calling or distress calling, because we had just seen a grizz that morning about 300 yards from where we were now set up.
That's right. You guys set up like right in the spot where you spotted that grizz. I forgot about
above them. But that bear wasn't stopping enough for me to get a shot. So I started ripping on that call and you know, Brian's the film guy, and he's like, he's behind me, and he's got the long lens down on the bear, and then he's got the other lens kind of on me. And inevitably, I just decide not to shoot that chocolate. It's like, you know what? It's not the bear for us. And so how did that go? So as soon as I'm kind of making that decision, you know, I hear something. And I'm like, I'm looking over to the side, and, you know, Brian's still got the cameras rolling. We can't see what's just over the hump. I've kind of got this old dead, and there's like an old stump in front of me. And I hear something, and I kind of look around, and I see this big old black bear that we hadn't even seen all day. We hadn't seen this bear on the mountain. And I look over, and that bear is already at like 35 yards. Jeez. And he is racing into us. Like, he's flying. And now he's coming in quick. And if I stand up, and the only thing I can do is take the offhand shot. He's about 30 yards when I shot him. And ended up dumping that bear right there. The next time we would have shot him, if I wouldn't have got him where it was, he would have been at like, I don't know, 20 feet, you know, when he would have came over the rise. And he was
you would have smelled him before
he was coming right to that call, you know. Hadn't seen us. He's just coming right in for that call. So we had a great trip. Overall, Brian ended up killing a great bear, and I got that great bear. And we ended up, Brian's going back, and he's doing some of the edits on the film. And he's looking at the footage, and he picks up what we didn't pick up at the time, and that big giant red had actually, when I ripped on those calls and I'm looking for chocolate, you know, trying to decide yay or nay, the first bear that came in was red. I mean, on a dime, and he was flying. And so he comes in, and he comes right past. He took the same line where I had just shot that. I had shot the big jet black. And so we don't know how close he got, but we didn't even know until we got home and Brian put it on the computer. Jeez. And actually saw that big red had actually come in, but we were so focused down here.
Yeah.
It's just, he hadn't made any noise. And when the big jet black came in just after red, he stepped on a stick, and it just like, oh, there's a bear right in front of us. But we never did. We would have never known without that film that red did come in, and he had to be extremely close. And he probably just got right next to us and smelled us and buggered out. But yeah, no, it was shocking when Brian sent me the footage of old red lightning coming in like that, and we had no idea. So yeah, head on a swivel. But
do you ever wonder, like, when you're out, like, how much of that stuff you do make? Because
it probably happens all the time.
Most people aren't out there filming, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they got their phone with them for a, you know, quick little clip.
You gotta wonder, like, how many times you're getting watched by a cat.
Jeez, that's what bears don't, for the most part, don't want to, even a grizzly doesn't want anything to do with you. With a rare occasion, but like cats,
probably watching you.
Those scare me. Like I shouldn't say scare me, but More than anything, everyone asks. I feel like that's the first thing people ask when they find out you're. Aren't you scared of bears? I'm like, I'm wary of bears. I'm not scared of them.
Yeah.
Cats make me a little bit nervous.
You've probably walked up under a couple of trees where there's been one looking down on you,
just sizing you up. That's the nice thing about carrying those big packs. You look a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot tougher.
It protects your neck a little bit too. But yeah, who knows what we don't see. How many elk come in quiet? Probably quite a few. Yeah. That's a guarantee. You know, cats, bears, they're super quiet. So probably you're around more animals than you think. But
sitting there glassing, focused on something, and who knows how many bucks have walked up right behind you, been like, oh, crap, and took off. Yeah. And you just never even...
Yep. So, yeah, moral of that story is try to not do a whole lot of calling. well, number one in Grizz country, but if you do call, I love calling, and I'll do it a lot this year. But when you have the ear protection in, like, be extra careful. because sometimes they'll come in so fast that little time to react.
Well, those things can move. I mean, I think that's one of the first things, like, mm-hmm. when you learn how quick those big old roly-poly
things can cover ground.
Holy crap.
I used to spend a lot of time in Alaska, and we were around those big old, you know, brown bears a lot, and you realize when you're fishing on one side of the river catching sockeye and a bear strolls up on the other side, how quickly they're covering ground. Or you see one on your side and he's, you know, 300-400 yards downstream. Jeez. All of a sudden he is on your fish. Like, you better hop in the boat and push off and get out into the river.
Ugh.
They just have those long strides and they're deceptively fast.
Well, I mean, in that video that came out, geez, I don't know. At this point, I don't know how long ago it was. I lost track of time. But down in Yellowstone, that grizzly dragging the elk, effectively drowning it in the river.
Yeah. Yep. That was crazy, wasn't it?
That was absolutely wild.
It was last summer that it did that. And then it kind of parked on the carcass there on the riverbank for a long time.
Days. It, like, kind of half buried it, and it just sat and owned it for a while. But
yeah.
Brings you new respect, and I know people are probably sick of me telling this story, but I'll tell it again because I don't care. It's my podcast.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, that was one of the first things that like blew my mind about hunting. I'll always have a special connection with bear hunting because remember when I was first introduced to hunting, I think my brother was like inviting me along on a dove hunt or something, dove opener, and so I was looking at all the regs and like how to get a license, and I just pull fishing game website, and I'm like reading through the whole thing like an idiot, like, because that's obviously the most efficient way to figure things out, is just read through the entirety of the fishing game regulations from start to finish.
Yeah.
That's
confusing.
Yeah, I just remember reading through, and I was reading about different seasons, and I come across archery bear, and I'm like, and it pops up on my Facebook memories all the time now. It's like it. I screenshotted it, and I'm like, holy crap, people actually go and try and shoot bears with bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is also, I didn't have quite the understanding that I didn't realize that some black bears are about the size of a black lab.
Mm-hmm.
And also that, you know, the difference, I'm thinking like, you know, a homie in there with, you know, 20 feet with a trad bow,
right,
versus a grizzly bear. That's like what it is in my mind, which happens.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it was.
Some people do that too. Some people take that route.
It was one of the first things that captured my imagination about hunting.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way to put it. And I think I'll always have a special connection with it. That's why I'm so excited about this year.
Yeah.
Is I can really dedicate time to black bear this season.
I'll tell you what, like, for the folks that haven't gotten into it, I know there's a lot of like newfound spring bear folks. I see it in the messages. There's a lot of people with a lot of questions, and they're just finding this thing, right?
Well, you just posted some about it, and didn't you get like 260 questions or something like ridiculous like that?
I think I said ask a bear question, and I got 260 questions.
Yeah.
So it's like, man, there's some podcast material. But yeah, I think there's a lot of people who traditionally have gone for deer, gone for elk. It's like a fall season thing. Like, hunting is in the fall. That's when you do it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of folks that are realizing now, like, man, there's this whole spring thing too. It's not, and it doesn't have to be just turkeys. You got bears. And tell you what, like, it's quickly become, over the years, it's one of my favorite times. It's one of my favorite hunts, bar none. I love mule deer hunting. I love elk hunting. But I can't say I don't love bear hunting just as much.
Yeah.
Because you're getting up there, the time of year, everything's coming alive. Bears are just coming out of their dens. You get to go into some just amazing places. Bears live in some incredible places, just like big old crusty mule deer do. And you get to hunt an animal that is very unpredictable. As soon as you think you got them figured out, they'll do something different. And they'll just wander, Sam. Like, there's no patterning of a black bear, except for right out of the den. They're pretty consistent. They don't move too far. and they'll go back to these sometimes certain areas to feed. But then after that, boy, they're just like, they'll wander. They'll walk this way, and then they'll walk that way, and then they'll go back this way, and for no rhyme or reason. They'll swim a river, and they'll feed a little bit, and they'll swim back on the river, and they'll feed over there. And there's this, it's just really an odd animal, but
well,
they're so fun to hunt.
They've got such a personality. It's one of those animals that you'll see. They'll go out, and they'll, like, play around in a river versus,
they
like...
They do some odd things.
Yeah, yeah, they're just, like, a weird...
They're fun to watch. Like, they're...
Oh, yeah.
I could sit and watch bears all day, and...
But how can you hunt them?
Yeah,
it's well, so cruel.
I respect them, and they're fun to hunt. But you know what? Also, is they're very good to eat.
I was gonna say they're even more fun to eat.
And I can speak, you know, 100% honesty for this. Our family, it's our favorite. Bear meat is the best.
Tops porcupine.
Even trumps elk meat. Porcupine's pretty good. But
I was going to say, I don't know. I've heard you talk about porcupine before in your Christmas dinners.
Yeah, but bear meat trumps all. And one of the best things about bear meat is it's almost hard to overcook. And that's some things that a lot of people don't think about is it's such a fatty meat.
Yep.
If it's a real lean game meat like an elk or a deer, you know, you can overcook it, and it's not my favorite. It's kind of tough, and it toughens out real fast. Bear meat, number one, you have to overcook it. You have to bring that temperature in the center to 160, 165, and hold it for a few. And you can't have any pink. You know, trichinosis is real.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like every bear these days has it. But you can literally cook the snot out of that thing, crisp in the outside, and cook it until, like I said, 165 degrees in internal. And you slice it up, and it's just this tender, moist, you know, fatty, rich piece of meat. And so you could be a terrible chef like, you know, a lot of us are. And, you know, we'll Traeger up, you know, some bear meat, and it just makes you look good. And, like, I'll do these bear roasts, and we'll just throw the whole roast, even on the birch barrel. We'll get that going, and we'll just sear the outside, and then I'll take that lid and I'll kind of set it up off of the flame a little bit, and just let that internal get to that 165. And it's hard to beat, man. It really is hard to beat, and it's just so greasy. It's got a good flavor to it.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
You know, you get a lot of hunters that'll eat just about anything. And so many of them are like, I just won't eat bear meat. It's too greasy. And it's, you know, so often we cook, we get so used to, we're like, okay,
what
you
makes
can't
a better
cook
hamburger, a yeah. greasy burger or a
oh,
dry.
Yeah. Well, it's like greasy burger. You can't cook an elk steak like you would a beef steak. And so we're so used to being like, oh, I have to undercook it. Well, yeah. But then you go and do the same thing with bear. Like, of course it's going to be greasy because it's got a giant fat content. And that's not like deer fat. That's not like fat. That's like a baseball.
No, it's woven into your meat. Like it's in there. It's not just the fat that you're peeling off the back. Just the meat itself has more fat into it. Now, one thing you got to be careful of when you're storing bear meat, and maybe this is where folks have gotten the idea that it's not the best. Because if you do try to long-term store bear meat, the fat does go rancid.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works in the freezer. You don't have that long. I'd recommend trying to get that bear completely eaten in no more than 5-6 months.
Really?
The bear fat, you know, until it's rendered and cooked down, then it's stable forever. But just straight bear fat, you put that in the freezer, it'll turn on you.
Hmm.
And so bear meat doesn't last as long in the freezer, like a lean wild game like venison, you know, deer, elk. It's so lean that, I'll pull those out 3 years later sometimes, and it's great. That doesn't work as well with bear meat.
So, interesting.
Now, you can bear meat, and you're solid. That's a way to hold
So that's one of the weirdest things, because when I first stayed with you guys, like, we had some bear burgers and had some of that canned bear meat. And I'm like, this is the weirdest thing, because let's face it, it kind of looks like dog food.
Yeah, it does.
It like, it does not, it's not an appetizing, it looks like something, you know, you remember the movie Seven?
Seven.
With Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt. Like, it's like the, it looks like something you'd like, you'd walk into one of the crime scenes and it would be sitting in jars on shelves.
Yeah.
It is not an appetizing looking thing.
No.
But holy crap, it's good.
It's tasty.
And it's so good.
And it, the thing, when you can it, you know, number one, you cook the trick out. So no worries.
Yeah.
You know, if you've done your 90 minutes on the pressure canner, no worries about trick. And it, everything that you can is going to be moist and tender. And so any part of the bear that you can is going to be super tender, just like any other meat. And yeah, you can just pull it out and it traps the fat in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you uncan it, like pop the top and then heat it up or toss it on some whatever, quinoa or potatoes or whatever you want to do, it's just got that fat already there and it doesn't turn on you like it does in just a freezer. I think one of the best ways to preserve bear meat is just that, is pressure canner.
There you go.
For sure.
Save a couple of steaks and grind for immediate usage. Can the rest.
Immediate usage, yeah. Try to empty it out of your freezer. Save the deer and the elk for long term storage if you're holding on to it for a while. But I'd get rid of that. I'd cook that bear meat as quick as you can.
Yeah.
Yep, for sure. Because the knock on bear, and I grew up with everybody telling me bear meat was nasty.
Yeah.
Is gross, you know, it's greasy or it's foul, it's got a funky taste. And I half wonder, like, is that funky taste from the storing method that they did? Maybe not taking the fat off enough or storing it too long, or how they, you know, took care of it in the beginning, I think has a lot to do with it. Or were they hunting in an area where it's feeding on a crud ton of skunk cabbage or maybe even salmon? You know, you can get some off flavors from that. But if you're hunting, like, the areas that we're hunting bears that aren't feeding on that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're just clean and chomping on. They're fattening up on huckleberries in the fall season.
I was going to say, and like, there's a big difference. If you're hunting them, like, late fall season, something like that, where, you know, gut piles have been dropping from hunters for a while. Yeah, it's going to probably pick up some of that flavor versus, you know, like you said, the ones that are fattening up on berries. It's like...
Yeah, there's not much... I mean, you can't really find a better meat than like a late August, first week in September, after they've been chomping on huckleberries for a couple weeks. Because they've fattened up so much. I mean, back in Washington State, it was almost hard to draw a spring bear tag. But you could go down and grab two over-the-counter tags in the fall... at any point as a resident. And so we'd be forced to hunt in August and into September. But that was the best time to get them because you literally find bears that were so round, you know, you're digging 5-6 inches of through bear fat on their back to get to their back strap. And that fat you can render down and there's all kinds of things you can do with it. But so it's really hard to beat that flavor of that meat.
Fat is like greasy. It's not like, again, it's not like deer fat where it's like almost the consistency of like a softball.
Right.
That fat's like greasy. How do you generally pack that out? Because that's got to make a mess with everything.
It does. Yep. It really gets those game bags greasy.
So, I mean,
no
it just,
doubt about it.
It just, you just kind of cut it off with the quarters and goes into game bags?
Depending on what kind of hunt you're on, if you're on a big backcountry hunt, obviously, you just treat it just like the other meat. You got to keep it really cool.
Yeah.
You know, that fat in warm, it leaches out real easily. It'll go rancid on you quickly versus just the meat. But like everything else, like a lot of times, if I'm taking bone out, like if it's not that tough of a pack out, you know, within a day, I'm leaving bone in a lot of times, and I'm just leaving that fat attached to the hind quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And bear hind quarters, you know, they're fairly short. You can get them in a decent sized game bag. They're not like a big long, even mule deer leg that's takes up a lot of space. They're pretty short, and I'll just leave it on. Now, if I'm going to be back there for a while, I will separate sometimes. I'll separate the meat from the fat, and I'll keep the fat in its own game bag, mm-hmm. keep that aside from it. And that's just in case. Like, in case something starts to sour, I want that fat off of it.
Yeah.
But most times we're trying to get it out, you know, in a real timely manner. But, yeah, it will, if it's going to turn, it's going to be the fattiest piece.
So are there any other considerations when you're skinning out, packing out a bear compared to, you know, like somebody that's just used to skinning out an elk or a deer?
Yeah, I think you have to be a little extra cautious with keeping it cool. Like I said, it doesn't do well, you know, over time with all that fat, but it also will go bad on you much quicker with that fat in the heat. So, you know, you could almost get away with a real lean meat like an elk quarter mm-hmm. hanging in a not warm environment, but
it's warm
not
out.
Not really cold.
Yeah, you're hanging it in the shade of it. It's in the shade mm-hmm. of a tree, but it's still pretty dang warm out, kind of.
Yeah.
You'll be fine.
You want to double down with bear. Really make sure there's no sun going to hit that game bag. Really make sure the temperatures are, you know, hopefully below 50.
Find a cool stream or something.
Find a stream. Yep. We've sunk. We always carry those contractor bags. And if you do have a creek, double up those things and sink that meat in a contractor bag. Make sure you submerge the whole bag so some of the meat isn't up grabbing sun or anything like that. And that's worked really well for us. But you just got to take extra precautions with bear. It will turn on you a lot quicker than the lean animals with that fat content.
But say you're back for a few days. One of the other cool things with the bear is, I think you may have just posted a story about this too, is rendering the fat out there in the field. You can take some of that fat and your
best meal that you'll ever have on the mountain is a fresh bear kill. Chunk up some of that bear fat. And, you know, fall bears, you're going to have more than you can even handle. Like, you can get a dozen quart jars of bear fat rendered off of a really nice big fall bear. Springtime, it's 50-50. Some of them come out of the den, they're real thin. Not much fat to deal with. Some of them come out with a surprising amount after hibernating for that long. And, you know, oftentimes there's always enough. There's like just enough. So you take the whatever fat you can get off a spring bear and dice it up, small cubes, drop that into kind of a low heat, whatever cookie you're running, whether you're a Jetboil guy or MSR guy, something that'll toggle down pretty nice and low. Orange flame, not blue flame.
Yep.
And just let that simmer. And it's surprisingly quick how much fat you'll get off of that rendered fat, you know, liquid fat. And then we'll kind of scoop
those. Do you ever add any, like, water to that or anything?
No, just straight fat. And what that does, you basically just have a little deep fryer, you know, right in front of you now that you got your – I usually take a little wider pot than some of those Jetboil skinny ones.
Yeah.
Those tend to be more of a
– Well, you get more of that
boiling
surface.
Water anyway. And, and you find, like, more of a Minimo. I use that Jetboil Minimo.
Yeah.
Got a fatter can to it. So you drop the fat in there. You'll build up an inch of just hot fat cooking. And then you'll kind of scoop those little crispies – the fat pieces out. You can eat them. They taste like popcorn. We actually eat them because usually by that point we're pretty skinny and we'll take whatever we can get. And then, you know, you cut up some nice little thin cubes of bear and meat and drop it in and you just deep fry. And again, you deep fry the crud out of these things. Make sure they're cooked. And that's the best meal that you'll ever have.
You do that with the heart? Like out the field?
Oh, yeah. All of it. Anything that you're willing to eat out there. if you got bear fat, you know, and you come across a grouse, and same thing. Deep fry grouse is hard to beat as well. But if you have bear fat to work with, you're golden. Nice. You're in for some pretty good, like, really flavorful meals with that. So,
awesome.
Hard to beat.
Oh, I'm looking forward to the season. It can't come quick enough for me at this point. I'm excited. I'm just excited.
Long winter,
to be honest.
We're finally here. We're, like I said, weeks away. So,
oh yeah,
getting those miles in every day, getting ready for the big mountains for spring bear.
And then just after bear season, we got Western Hunting Summit coming up.
Yeah, yeah, we are wrapped up. Our June is pretty near filled with Western Hunting Summit.
Yeah.
We got the first event kicks off June 10th, goes to the 13th, and then the next weekend is another four-day event. The next weekend is another. So we kind of stacked them in that time frame. There's strategy there. You know, the weather tends to be somewhat good, and it's also kind of just after bear season for most folks. And a lot of the presenters that I have at these, I don't want to, like, screw them out of their scout time for mule deer, which is August. And, you know, they got to make sure they
got to finish up their spring seasons and get their scouting in. So, really, you are definitely limited. It's like, unless you want to, I mean.
Well, let's face it. The hardcore mule deer guys, they're scouting in July.
Yeah.
And definitely in August. June is about it. Like, if you want to stay away from, we go up there now and, you know, be snow-filled. But that's not as fun as just June here in Montana is a good month.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually it's fairly warm. We'll have our rain days, but no, this year we've got great presenters for each of the three events.
Well, we're breaking it down a little differently this year from before. It was elk, mule deer, bear.
Right.
Now this year it's more, and I think it's going to work a little bit better this way this year. I think it's going to be more relevant to people.
Well, and I think people want to hunt everything. They want to be able to hunt and talk about bears, deer. People aren't necessarily now like, I'm just an elk hunter or I'm just a deer hunter.
Yeah.
Now I think people are on to like, man, he could have a ton of fun on a spring bear hunt and then do a little deer and then do maybe a little archery elk in September, a little deer in November.
Mm-hmm.
So we broke it down to more of a weapon specific. And so that just allows us to speak to everything, you know, for the guy that's real comfortable, really not interested in bow hunting. He could come to the first event, the June 10th event, and we're going to have some rifles for guys to, you know, shoot and play with and get education on proper form and all that. And then, you know, the presenters will be speaking to those type hunts, you know, more of like, if we're talking about deer, we're probably going to be talking more about second half of October and November timeframe, rut hunts.
A little bit later season, because that's when rifle typically falls.
Right. Versus like our archery event, which is the last weekend, 24th through the 27th. That one we're going to be talking about. Probably a lot of September, you know?
Yeah.
And then those, you know, we have presenters to match, like the Brian Barneys, who are all in on archery. And then, you know, like say for the rifle event, there'll be guys like, you know, Brady Miller and folks like that, that, you know, none of us are purists by any stretch. Maybe Brian is more to just archery, but like, I love hunting archery. I also love hunting rifle. I would grab a muzzleloader in a half a second if it put me in a pretty cool season.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of the presenters that show up, if a guy shows up to a rifle event and he wants to talk archery, we're going to talk archery.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, the events are cool because, you know, fairly small groups, we're able to speak to each person individually. And that's one of the keys, I think, this year. We want to make sure we have time for just conversations.
It really feels like, I mean, it, you know, it's good sized groups, but even with that, with how it's structured and the time that's allowed, and there's a lot of stuff going on, you get a lot of value, but you do feel like, you know, you can sit down and talk with you and Brian Barney or, you know, Jason Matzinger, and like everyone kind of hangs out. And that's one of the cool things. Last year, a lot of the speakers just hung out. They're like, well, shoot, I want to sit down and listen to Brian Barney talk about archery. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, like, they'll do their presentation. They'll just hang out. And inevitably, if they're there, they're going to have a little circle around them of people asking them questions, which is great. And I think a lot of the most valuable information to attendees comes from that. And so one thing we're focusing on this year is just that. We want time, whether that's, you know, we're going to have some little fitness things, hike and workout and spending time on the 3D course for the archery event or the rifle course for the rifle. There's going to be a time for people to really get to know each other and have those little one-on-ones with the presenters. you know, when we cut out and Birch Barrel is there making our dinners and cooking over the barrels, we're just going to be sitting around hanging out for the last few hours of all every evening and just trying to make sure that we get everybody's questions answered and addressed. So, and the other thing that's unique about this year is nobody's going anywhere. We got them locked down to the ranch. Like the folks that attend are going to stay with us. They're going to be camping with us there at the ranch. No hotels, none of that.
Well, I think that's going to add so much, especially to the end of day experience where people aren't sitting there being like, I got to get back to the hotel, right. Got to get ready, you know, we're up early tomorrow. You know, it's going to be a lot. I feel like it's going to be a lot more relaxed since everybody's going to be there.
Yep.
You know, you're walking 200 yards or whatever, you know, to your tent or your trailer or where, you know, whatever you're staying in.
Right.
And it's going to allow people to stick around a little bit longer and swap stories.
Yeah, we're all going to be eating breakfast together, lunch, dinner. We're all basically going to be camping in the same big pasture right alongside the ranch there, ranch house. And, I think there'll be a lot of friendships made from just the attendees. Mm-hmm. And I know from the past events that we've had, you know, there's been a lot of friendships made and, you know, hunting buddies that are now hunting together from the events that we've had in the past.
I mean, I still talk with a lot of people. You know, I wasn't an official attendee last year. You know, I was kind of in and out, but I still talk with a lot of the people that I encountered. I mean, a bunch of them. And people, I mean, it's people from everywhere. Everyone, I know a lot of people just kind of assume it's like, well, it's just going to be a bunch of like Montana and Wyoming people and
not at all.
A bunch of Ryan's friends from Wyoming. I mean,
nope.
I mean, tons of people from California and Texas,
we had
Colorado.
18 different states last year.
Yeah.
People came from kind of all over. Yeah, we had a lot from Washington, Oregon, California, and then we had them from everywhere, from Texas to Pennsylvania and everything in between. Very few, actually, from the state of Montana. This year, we have a few more already signed up. We've got more gals signed up this year than we've had in the past, which is great to see. We have, you know, one of the gals that's going to be speaking, Alicia, she's a rock star of a hunter. She's great. She's going to be coming in, and she's a local guy here from Bozeman. She's going to be talking about nutrition and things like that. She's just
I got to meet her
powerhouse
at the, you know, she kind of hung out a few days at the event. I want to say the first event. I forget if the first one was elk or mule deer, but she hung out a few days and I got a chance to sit and talk with her. She's awesome. She's got some great stuff going on.
Yep. She's fit, number one, very fit, and she knows how to hunt very well. She's got a lot of success because of it. She's a hard worker, and she's great at the nutrition side as well. So full package there. So she's going to be there hanging out and helping and talking. And we're hoping to draw more ladies in as we move these things forward and keep growing them.
Well, I mean, you know, recording this end of March, it's 25th, the day we're recording this, and I mean, it's close. I mean, running out of. I think we've had a couple of purchases since then, but like last I checked, we were down to. I mean, archery sold out, combo sold out.
Fast,
and we were down to like last I checked, we were down to 10. We were talking earlier. We've had a few sales since then for rifle and.
So there's not many spots left. There's a few spots left. It's been great. Love seeing, you know, the interest this year was cool to see when we had that pre-sale. It blew me away how many folks jumped right on that. And prior people that have already been to past summits, there's been a lot of folks that have not just been to one, but two or three, and a couple guys have been to four, which is nuts.
Well, I mean, you know, giving people a look behind the glass, you know, I help you manage the email list and I go through and I was just kind of cleaning it up and like looking at the different years attendees and tagging them and being like, okay, this person, you know, is 2019, 2020.
Yep.
This one's 20. I'm like, there's a lot of people with like 3 or 4 tags on here that have.
Yeah. Surprising, right? Never would have guessed it.
I mean, if that tells you about it. And even some of those people that came last year came to multiple events.
Right.
They came to 2 or 3 events.
Yeah, we had guys that came to mule deer and elk or elk and bear. It was a Mixed bag.
I mean, that's
the same year.
That tells you something about the event. It's such a mix of everything, because it's not just the speakers, and it's not just like the camaraderie. It's that whole mix of everything that makes it such a cool,
yeah,
unique event.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we were hoping for, is a community here of people that can bounce ideas off, and if anybody who's attending has questions at the event or outside of the event or after the event, they've got our numbers and they got our contacts, mm-hmm. and we can try to help anybody and everybody out. But yeah, we definitely made a lot of lifetime friendships already, and definitely going to have a lot more. I'm going to be hunting with a gentleman this year who has been to 2 or 3 of the events. Hunted with a gentleman last year that I met at the first event. We went down and killed a couple of elk together. That was cool.
Nice.
And so, no, it's a good group. I think a lot of like-minded people. And again, I think folks are probably going to meet people who are similar in where they're at, maybe, in the process of learning. Or there's guys that show up that are very new.
Yeah.
There's guys that show up that have done this for 10 years. Maybe they're there for the experience. Maybe they're there for the fun. A little bit more education. It's hard to say, but it's a wide range for sure.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, this will come out in probably about 2 weeks or so, something like that. And who knows at that point if there will be
any spots left,
but
yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know if people are listening to this, want to go. There might be one or two left to grab. So,
yep. I know. It's funny. We haven't talked about it much for the longest time. We did a pre-sale and then we're like, man, that was crazy. Sold out 2 events, and we just kind of dropped it. We didn't even talk about it. And now we're like, we have a handful of spots here. Maybe we should talk about it.
Yeah, there we go. But, well, go
either
check.
Either way, I'm looking forward to it. Hill is looking forward to it. Hill will be there as well, talking if people have questions. Usually, here's what happens, Sam. If Hill's at an event, and you probably know this.
Oh, yeah.
Guys will come up to Hill and then, like, what's the one thing? There's a doctor and a bunch of guys. Like, testosterone.
Oh, yeah. You say the T word, all of a sudden everyone's like, ears.
Yeah,
like,
men's health. Inevitably, if I ever walk by Hill and she's got a crowd around her at one of these events, a bunch of dudes talking about testosterone and where they're at or their issues. But she'll be there educating and talking through that health.
Well, make sure, if you're listening, go check out westernhuntingsummit.com.
Absolutely.
Good luck getting a pass.
Yeah.
Check it out.
All right.
So folks want to follow along, all that good stuff. Where are they finding you?
On the IG, it's the Healthy Hunter, Stealthy, S-T-H-E-A-L.
Okay. And I'm going to throw, Josh is probably going to listen to this, and he's going to, one of my guys, Josh, I remember the first time he asked me, he's like, is it like Saint Healthy?
Saint Healthy.
And I'm probably going to get a message from him. He's going to give me some grief about calling him out on that. But yeah, so nah. Stealthy, Saint Healthy.
And I don't even know if it's Stealthy or Stealthy. I don't even know, but it's somewhere in there.
I can't even spell Stealthy normal anymore because
I know they throw an H.
There's no H in there. So like, yeah. I don't know. It's your brand. You can pronounce it how you want, but when I have to explain it to people, it's always Stealthy.
Yeah, that's how I say it, just so they know the age there. But Stealthy Hunter on the IG, and then we've got our own podcast as well, Hunt Harvest Health, that my wife really hosts most of these days. she's the educator on that one. But westernhuntingsummit.com if you have any questions about that.
Well, give a shout out to Stealthy Nutrition as well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We got a lot of .coms going on. So there's the stealthynutritioncbd.com if you're interested in CBD
line over the past few months, seriously.
Yep, we're getting ready to drop some more gut health supplements on there. That has been one of the most successful. My wife did a gut health restoration program years ago, And that thing has been downloaded a ton. And so we're adding some of those subs to our lineup as well, along with the krill omega oil and the turmeric and the probiotics and those, along with all the CBDs.
All the good stuff.
All the things.
Get all the products. You guys got a bunch of articles on there as well. Health.
Recipes galore.
Recipes, nutrition, all of that. All of that good stuff. But awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad we got to make it happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, a lot easier of a trip nowadays.
We're one town away here. So, yeah, we're pretty close.
There we go. All right, y'all. That'll do it for this episode. Make sure to check out the show notes page on the wildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. That'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this podcast inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher. And head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.